morning. I leave versus McCasey.
Morning, Your Honors.
Morning.
May it please the Court. Your Honors, my name is Ryan Nayer, and I'm here today on behalf of the petitioner appellant in this matter, Ms. Anchinetche Ayele. This is an immigration case. More specifically, this is an appeal of the decision to deny Ms. Ayele's application for asylum in the United States. The sole issue before the Court is whether the persecution of an individual's father, mother, uncle, step-uncle, and the members, leaders, and supporters of a political opposition group to which that individual belongs constitutes an objectively reasonable fear of future persecution. The case comes before the Court today as an appeal of a one-page summary affirmation of a Board of Immigration Appeals decision of an immigration judge decision that was issued back in June of 2006. What Ms. Ayele is asking that the Court do today is reverse and remand the decision to issue an opinion that's consistent with the findings of this Court. There are two primary errors that the immigration judge committed. First, he erred in the standard that he applied to the evidence that was before him with respect to the persecution of Ms. Ayele's immediate and extended family, as well as the persecution of the members of the All Amhara People's Organization, which is the political opposition group to which Ms. Ayele belongs. And the second error is in analyzing the facts, namely the evidence that was before him. Did he turn an eye to all of the evidence before him? Did he consider all the evidence before him? And did he consider all of the facts that were favorable to Ms. Ayele's claim? Before I move any further into the discussion today, I wanted to turn the Court's attention briefly over to the record at page 76, which is a portion of the immigration judge's decision. I think that this tells the Court everything that it needs to know today. And I'm going to read from that. Under the portion of the judge's decision where he discusses Ms. Ayele's well-founded fear of future persecution, the judge states as follows. The respondent has sufficiently established a subjective fear of future persecution. She credibly testified that she truly fears that she will face discrimination in employment, mistreatment by the current government, and possibly even incarceration based on her familial relationship and political party affiliation if she is returned to Ethiopia. Next paragraph. Nevertheless,
what page are you on of the transcript?
Your Honor, I'm on page 76 of the record, which is page 13 of the immigration judge's decision. And I'm now midway through the page, the paragraph that begins with the term nevertheless. If I may continue. Nevertheless, the respondent has not sufficiently demonstrated that her fear is objectively reasonable, given the current country conditions contained in the record and cited above. As noted earlier, the EPRDF government does not appear to be specifically targeting APO members for persecution. Country reports indicate that as long as opposition groups renounce violence, they are permitted to operate in Ethiopia. And then he continues at the end of that paragraph by noting, based on respondent's own testimony, since her father's release in 1993, he has not been physically harmed, rather only placed under surveillance. Thus, the fact that respondent's father has been living in Ethiopia, quote-unquote, relatively unharmed for over a decade after departure significantly diminishes her claim of future persecution. Now, we think that this tells the Court everything that it needs to know. First, we think it tells the Court that the immigration judge placed an undue emphasis on the significance of the fact that Ms. Ayele's father still lives in Ethiopia and he's not been physically harmed. As we brief to this Court, the Seventh Circuit precedent does not require physical harm in order to establish a claim for persecution. A claim for persecution under the precedent of this Court can be established by severe economic deprivation, surveillance, including monitoring and phone tapping, the fact that he was formerly incarcerated and tortured and interrogated and continues to live in Ethiopia under the watchful eye of the government, the fact that his passport has been taken from him and he does not have the liberty to leave the country. These are all other factors that this Court has looked at in concluding that there was persecution. And these are factors that the immigration judge discounts and doesn't discuss anywhere in his opinion. He focuses solely on the fact, as did the government in briefing, or almost exclusively on the fact, that there was no physical harm, ignoring the fact that he was physically harmed at one point in time, and ignoring the fact that there are other factors established by the record evidence that shows that he continues to be persecuted in other ways. The second thing that this establishes is that Ms. Ayala's testimony was found by the immigration judge to be credible. And this is significant for many different reasons. And to be clear, he not only found that her testimony was credible, but the corroborating testimony of her uncle, or rather step-uncle, who was present at the hearing before the immigration judge, was also found to be credible. And the things that they testified to were Ms. Ayala's involvement in the All Almohara People's Organization, and the status of her family, a very high-ranking, formerly prominent political family in Ethiopia under the prior regime that was overthrown in 1991. All of these facts, the persecution of her father, the surveillance of her father, the fact that his day-to-day living only comes as a result of the fact that his family provides for him financially, all these things the immigration judge found. And he focused exclusively or almost exclusively on the fact that he was not physically harmed and the fact that the overall evidence in the record, at least in his view, did not establish that the current conditions in Ethiopia established her claim of persecution from an objective basis. Well, in response to the immigration judge's conclusion, as we briefed before this court, there are two very important things to consider. First and foremost, this court has held that an individual's credible testimony, if it provides sufficient detail as to persecution, can independently establish the objective factor of the well-founded fear of future persecution test. That test has two factors. First, a subjective component, and second, an objective component. Importantly, the immigration judge found in Ms. Ayala's favor with respect to the subjective component and took issue only with the objective component. But after finding her credible, and then the fact that there is record evidence establishing independently, namely United States State Department reports with respect to country conditions in Ethiopia, establishing that there is a persecution of the AAPO, or rather the current existence of that political opposition group, namely the CUD/AEUP, those two things taken together are a basis for remanding this case to the board to reach a decision consistent with this court's findings. And that was evidenced very recently by this court in 2005 in the Gebre Medin decision. The second thing that we need to look at is what was the record evidence in front of the immigration judge, and did that record evidence establish a persecution of the All-Amhara People's Organization or the current manifestation of those political groups? And importantly, the immigration judge cites to, in his own opinion, at Exhibit 11, the 2005 State Department report, which on review of the record, we noticed was absent from the record that was included and presented to this court for review by the government, and which is the very reason why we submitted it to the court via a supplemental appendix that was attached to our reply brief. It's Exhibit A of the supplemental appendix. That's the 2005 State Department report. And that report is chock full of evidence that shows that political opposition groups to the current regime are indeed being persecuted. Pages 1, 2, 3, 5, 7, 10 all talk about the current government's regime of current political opposition groups in Ethiopia. It talks about the imprisonment, the arbitrary arrest, shootings in the streets, and various other forms of persecution of these political opposition groups. And Ms. Ayala, this was not challenged by the immigration judge, is indeed a member of this political opposition group, which the record evidence establishes was indeed persecuted. I also wanted to focus on her father's circumstances and go back to this issue briefly. Her father's circumstances are he currently lives in a house where, for the most part, his activities are monitored by the government, his phone lines are tapped, he cannot leave the country, he's got no liberty to leave the country. This is a former cabinet-level official of the Ethiopian government that has been told you really can't work in any other capacity other than a farm worker or in some other menial type of employment. This is evidence that this court has found before on two different occasions, both in Borka and Koval, constitutes persecution. Both in Borka and Koval, these were individuals, Borka was a radiologist, Koval was a PhD-level student, where they were not allowed to pursue their education or pursue their chosen field, and the only type of employment that they could get was a very menial-level job. And that's the exact facts that we have here with respect to Mr. Ayala's father, Mrs. Ayala's father. And in those cases, that was found to be persecution. We find that those cases are, or we would argue that those cases are very instructive here, and that the similar fact exists there. Furthermore, this is an individual who was held without charge for 2.5 years, during which time he was tortured and interrogated. And after being released from prison, we believe that the record evidence establishes that the only reason that he was released from prison was due to international pressure and the fact that he was in a formerly prominent position and a very formerly high-profile position where he made contacts on the international front. And these international organizations, as established by the record evidence, submitted letters to the current government saying, let him out of jail. Mr. Yele testified to this fact. The Yeles confirmed that he was indeed visited while he was in jail. And that's what the record evidence establishes. It's not only the persecution of Ms. Ayele's father, whose persecution, importantly, can lead to her own persecution, not only on the basis of imputed political opinion, but familial ties. And both of these theories of law are theories of persecution that have been recognized by this court. We also need to look at the persecution of her mother, who, when the EPRDF forces came into Addis Ababa in 1991, fled to Kenya with the petitioner's two sisters in Kenya, was persecuted by Ethiopian insurgents, fled Kenya, left to the United Kingdom, has now been granted permanent legal status in the United Kingdom in recognition of her persecution and the likelihood of future persecution. And again, she has qualities that are in common to her daughter, Ms. Ayele, who's asking that this court grant her claim for asylum. There's the familial ties to two formerly prominent political figures in the prior regime. There's the fact that all of these individuals are all ethnic Amharas, which is a basis that the record evidence establishes for persecution. They are all members of the All Amhara People Organization, which is a political opposition group that stands against the current regime in Ethiopia. All these are common, immutable characteristics that establish that the persecution of the mother and the persecution of the father also lead to a likelihood, an objectively reasonable likelihood, that she will also be persecuted.
Let me ask you this. Are any other family members besides her father still living in Ethiopia?
Your Honor, there's a statement in the record that the government points out saying that she has extended family living in Ethiopia. But the only specific evidence as to who are those family members comes from Ms. Ayele and Mr. Tagagne's testimony. And the individuals described in that testimony are the father, who we've already discussed, the mother, who we've already discussed, and has fled to the United Kingdom along with Ms. Ayele's two sisters, her step-uncle, who is now here in the United States and has been granted asylum for similar facts that she is claiming today, her uncle, who disappeared in 1997, as testified by Ms. Ayele and Mr. Tagagne, and to this day has not been heard from and is believed to be dead. And those are the individuals that we specifically know about. Well, as far as whether or not there may be some other extended family members, that is a possibility, but we don't know that from the record. All we do know from the record and conclude conclusively about are the individuals that I've already discussed.
Is it clear from the record that the family-based claim, the family-based persecution, that's her social group that was targeted for persecution, was litigated before the agency?
Your Honor, that was certainly argued before the Board of Immigration Appeals. The three legal bases for persecution that were argued in briefing were persecution of her family, persecution of the ethnic Amhara people, and persecution of the All Amhara People's Organization or political opposition groups. All of those three arguments were raised before the Board of Immigration Appeals.
Well, did the immigration judge really grapple with that theory of the case? I mean, there's a lot of recitation of what the evidence was on that, and it was found to be credible, but not really analyzed in the context of that sort of a claim, a pattern of practice persecution against her family as a social group, as a discrete social group.
Your Honor, I completely agree with you. I mean, the evidence was certainly in front of the immigration judge to evaluate that basis, but he didn't. I mean, he focused, again, exclusively on whether or not her father is currently being physically persecuted, and he didn't take into consideration any of these other various grounds for persecution that the Seventh Circuit has recognized exist.
Well, if that's the case, we wouldn't do that in the first instance under the Supreme Court's decision in, I can't remember the name of it, Gonzalez versus Thomas, I think. We'd have to send it back.
Absolutely, Your Honor, and that's what we're asking for today, that this court reverse and remand to the board, to give the board an opportunity to rectify the errors that were in the immigration judge's decision. The board issued a one-page summary affirmation of the IJ's decision, And as the government points out in briefing, the IJ did issue a 16-page decision, but nowhere in those 16 pages are an analysis of all the various different theories of persecution.
He found that she credibly testified that she truly fears she will face discrimination, mistreatment by the current government, and possibly even incarceration based on her familial relationship. Right? I mean, he found that to be credible.
Yes. And
but then the focus on the country reports that followed that finding up was all about the broader ethnic group, as I read this, and political conditions rather than her familial claim.
That is one of the problems, Your Honor. I mean, she focuses on evidence that doesn't have to do with the persecution of her family and recognizes that the only evidence with respect to the persecution of her family is her own credible testimony. Your Honor, if possible, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
I have any left. We'll see.
I guess not, then.
We'll see if I can give you a minute. I should just count on getting a minute later.
Thank you.
May it please the Court. Good morning. Scott Rumpel for the Attorney General. This is actually a case about an alien who admits that she never suffered persecution in the past, and therefore she bore the heavy burden of showing that she has a well-founded fear of persecution if returned to Ethiopia. And before this Court, what she must show is that the record not only supports such a conclusion, but actually compels it, and in fact that is not the case. There's a bunch of issues that were just put out, and I think instead of addressing them one at a time as they were put out, I'll just sort of go through all the individual claims that were put forward in the briefing and discuss them as they come up. And I was going to start with the pattern or practice of persecution claims. There were three that were put forward by counsel for petitioner. And the rules related to a pattern or practice claim is that the conduct against the group must be extreme. What must be demonstrated is that it's systematic, pervasive, or organized efforts to kill, imprison, or severely injure members of a protected group. And if a group, in fact, gets protection as being there being a pattern or a practice of persecution against the group, then every single member of that group automatically gets protection. Now, related first to Amhara and that ethnicity, the country report, in fact, every single country report, lists Amharas as one of the two groups that not only are doing okay in the region, but play an actual dominant role in the political or cultural life. That is the actual language that is used, and that is the language that was also used in the immigration judge in his opinion. So to say that somehow there would be a pattern of practice against the group.
I'm more concerned about the family-based claim.
Sure. In terms of the family-based claim, well, I should probably just clarify at the outset that the issue wasn't necessarily addressed by the immigration judge in terms of specifically stating whether or not family could constitute a social group. That was sort of assumed that related to issues related to her ethnicity and political opinion, as well as things going on with her family, that's all relevant to make an assessment of whether or not there was, in fact, a well-founded fear of persecution. And so for purposes here, the only issue really is whether the conduct that she would, or any harm that might befall her if she were returned, is severe enough to actually constitute persecution. And that's really what it comes down to.
Well, I'm concerned, as Judge Wood is, about the family situation, because the IJ made no findings whatsoever with respect to the historical persecution of her mother, uncle, and step-uncle.
Well, historically, none of those... She admitted that there was no past persecution. So in that respect, there was nothing in the past related to any of them that has any relevance. It's forward-looking at this point. It's what, based on the evidence that's in the record, what in the future is going to happen to her, and why would it happen? And in terms of family members, she took the most direct family member, namely the father, and used him as a benchmark that said, well, let's just make this reasonable assessment to begin with. Whatever it is that he's going through, there's no reason in the record to assume that she would have anything more than that happen to her. And that was where he started.
But you're not quarreling with the fact that he's been prevented from working, that his phone has been monitored. None of those facts are you disputing?
There was certainly a level of surveillance that was stated in the record, and certainly that's something that we agree with completely. And as we mentioned in the brief, it's not that the immigration judge or the agency didn't recognize all the factors that could be used in a consideration of persecution. It was simply the fact that even though surveillance is something to be considered along with many other things in an assessment, he just didn't find that in this case that particular conduct was extreme enough to constitute persecution.
Well, there is past imprisonment and torture of the father that's of record, isn't that right?
But that's related to the father, and that was a specific event, and that had to do with him being a former member of the DERG.
Right, but that's the whole point of a family as social group pattern of practice claim, is that the persecution doesn't have to be of the asylum claimant.
In terms of pattern of practice of persecution, I'll address that point, Your Honor, because that was never raised at any point, because if you think about it, for there to be a pattern or practice of persecution against a few family members is sort of to say that they would be singled out. So how would there be any distinction? But I could go through that analysis, and in fact, if you look at a pattern of practice of persecution claim, it has to be systematic, it has to be organized and pervasive. Well, was there anything systematic or organized? No. What happened to her father? That had to do with him being a former member of the Mengistu regime. What about the step-uncle? That had to do with a specific event in 1994 relating to him being at a demonstration. And what about the step-uncle's brother? That had to do with him being injured or potentially killed, if I remember, in the southern region of Ethiopia. And it wasn't even by people of that Tigrayan-dominated government. It was by people of Oromo ethnicity. So in that respect, there's nothing organized or systematic about anything that has happened.
Well, what about her mother and having to flee to Kenya?
Well, she had to flee to Kenya because...
And her sister.
But that doesn't have anything to do with whether she has a well-founded fear of persecution. The fact that that had to happen, that she had to go to Kenya, and by the way, she didn't get asylum in Kenya, and I think both parties in the briefs actually do concede that point. She has permanent status there. She didn't get asylum. And the fact that she had to flee doesn't in and of itself have any bearing on whether the record would compel a conclusion.
Well, are you saying the only way she could have a fear of future persecution is if she had been threatened?
If she had been threatened in the past? No, it's based on circumstantial evidence related to those around her, which is absolutely the case, as the government pointed out in its brief. But you still have to use those circumstances around you cumulatively to determine whether or not the record would compel such a conclusion at this point. And that would have to do with the treatment of her father, which he was obviously able to send letters, even though it wasn't brought into court. So we don't know what would have been in that letter. She did talk about the fact that there was potentially some monitoring going on, or that the government didn't want to give him a job, but he had been able to find odd jobs. And she did say that they have extended family living there. And the uncle made the same point as well about having family members in Ethiopia who support them. So all of these factors considered together, plus the fact that with her mother, in terms of the relevance of the mother, she argued that because they were not able to get to the mother, that they would want to get to her, which of course begs the question, if they wanted to get indirectly to the mother, well, the father's right there, why could they not just get to him?
Well, but the IJ didn't look at these in the context of, say, the severe economic hardship of the father, the surveillance, the inability to leave the country. I mean, these are all factors that we've recognized can provide a substantial basis for the grant of asylum.
The immigration judge did, in fact, list every factor that this court has stated that could potentially form a basis for finding a well-founded fear of persecution. And, in fact...
But in the analysis, didn't really look at it in context. I agree that he just cherry-picked various issues, but when you look at it in the context of the country reports and what our case law is, he really didn't address it.
Well, with the country reports, I think he did actually address it. I think he went very specifically, and he said that AAPO members, as well as people of Amhara ethnicity, there is no pattern of practice of persecution against them, which was the claim that was put forward. And he also did talk about Ayeli specifically being able to find a job. So he did talk about economics, too. So I think that all the issues were actually talked, not maybe to the extent in a brief, but that doesn't have to be the case. All that has to happen is that a decision is made in terms sufficient to allow this court to understand that the immigration judge thought about all the issues that were presented, as you could see through his analysis throughout the entire proceeding, and put out the opinion in a way that makes this court understand that everything was indeed considered. And beyond that, I also would like to just make a point. I don't know if this court is aware that there were motions that are pending before this court, because all of this extra stuff came in during the reply brief, And I think it's...
The only thing that I had a question about is that the country report was used by the IG, and the immigration judge, right?
The 2005?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was part of the package that they sought to introduce.
That, well, besides that, that was taken administrative notice of. But the other three reports were new and were in the reply brief.
And there's no problem with us accepting that 2007 country report. I mean, maybe this Amnesty International report and the testimony of the International Advocacy Director is on more shaky ground, but certainly not the 2007 country report.
Well, regardless of the actual document itself, I would also just point the court's attention to the timing, because it doesn't allow the respondent to put forward any rebuttal as to the facts that were inferred from what's in the report, because the government actually disagrees. What he's saying is completely false. The AAPO is not now called the CUD. That's actually completely false. There was a split in the group in 2002, and what happened is that some part of the group formed this new group that is listed in the 2005 and 2007 country reports, and part retained its identity as the AAPO. And which one was Ayeli a member of? Well, she told us. And she told us on page 177 of the record. When she was asked by counsel, do you know what's going on today with the Amhara, with the AAPO in Ethiopia? And she said, right now, even as we speak, is that the group is being split into one who is promoting the welfare of the Amhara group, that's the AAPO. The other one is trying to incorporate all other, not political parties, but like Oromo and the Tigrarians, so it's trying to become more all-inclusive. That's the CUD. So that's a different group of which he's not a member. So here, counsel, it stands here for the first time trying to explain to the court, because of the fact that it was put into the reply brief, trying to deal with all these factual issues, when in reality the court, the jurisdiction of the court should be limited to that which was in the administrative record below. But that issue aside, I would also just bring the court's attention to the timing and just note that government does not agree factually with the issues that are put forward by counsel for petitioner.
But you all certainly understand we have in the past authorized taking judicial notice of a State Department report that was not in the administrative record.
There are times, Your Honor, right. and yes, I did acknowledge it, but this court has done it. And there's also times where the court said, no, jurisdictionally, we're not able to. And there's also times where the court said, we're not going to resolve the issue because the issue wasn't brought before the court. But all of that aside, the 2005 report, the idea that somehow information that was in that report he wasn't able to put into his opening brief because he didn't know what my arguments were going to be, but that was the record before the court. That was the record that the immigration judge had taken administrative notice of. And as a final point, because I seem to think that this court is focusing and is most concerned with the issue related to family and social group, I would just point out that the issue related to family and social group wasn't one, there was no nexus issue. It was sort of assumed. So there was no decision made on that point, and no decision needed to be made on that point, because the immigration judge was able to make the determination that solely based on the level of the severity of the harm, that is all that needed to be decided, because that issue alone was a reason to deny asylum to Ayeli. And at this stage of the proceedings, the record doesn't compel a contrary conclusion. And I will that is all I will say, unless the court has any other questions for me.
Counsel, in your motion to strike, you did address the issues you just discussed. In other words, the government was able to respond, right?
The government was able to respond to all the jurisdictional issues, but related to this court's holding in custom vehicle, where essentially the court said, you better not put on the motion judge the burden of dealing with factual disputes. I didn't discuss any of these factual dispute issues for that very reason.
Well, the court will address whether or not what and if anything is admitted.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You have a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. With that 1 minute, I'd like to focus on two points. First, with respect to whether or not Ms. Ayala has a heavy burden, this court has made very clear that in order to establish an objectively reasonable fear, all that she needs to establish is a 10% possibility of persecution. This court has repeatedly held that. If she can meet that burden, she establishes what she needs to prove on an appeal. Second, the government in briefing, much as the IJ did, focuses almost exclusively on a pattern or practice of persecution claim. I agree that there are certain requirements to establish a pattern or persecution claim, but the strongest arguments based off the record evidence are the persecution of her family, her father, mother, uncle, step-uncle, sisters. All of that is the basis for her claim and the primary reason why the BIA should be reversed. And finally, with respect to the CUD not being the AAPO, Ms. Ayala is a member of the AAPO here in the United States. While it's true in Ethiopia there has been a split, that split happened in 2005, following the time of the elections in Ethiopia. She testified prior to that time, and that's an important consideration to keep in mind.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.